नमस्कार। हमारा देश और पूरा विश्व आज कोविड-19 की चुनौतियों का सामना कर रहा है। कोविड-19 अभी ख़त्म नहीं हुआ और कोविड-19 की तरफ लड़ाई करते करते इफ़ यू वॉन्ट टू लिसन समथिंग कूल अमेजिंग एंड एंटरटेनिंग लिसन टू आवर पॉडकास्ट। हाई आई एम राजीव।
हाई आई एम अभिषेक एंड वी ब्रिंग यू आवर पॉडकास्ट बट वाई वी नेम्ड इट लाइक दिस। लिसन टू अस because we bring you amazing stories and interesting facts around the world.
Hello everyone and welcome to the 9th episode of But Why. This is a very another exciting episode where we have a guest and we are going to talk with something which we have never experienced before. So before we start, I would like to introduce myself. Hi, I'm Rajiv.
Hi, this is Abhishek.
Today, we have someone who is a very good friend of ours and he has a very interesting introduction. So, generally, whenever we get our 12th, whenever we complete our 12th or 10 plus 2, then we have only one option that we will go for either computer engineering or ENTC engineering. And max to max, if someone is very fond of engineering, then he will go for mechanical engineering. But this person has altogether went into a different route and graduated from agricultural engineering. On the top of that, he has completed MBA. Now, it's not an MBA, it's agricultural business management, which is again altogether something very different. He has 10 years of experience in Israeli agribusiness firm, and he worked in irrigation, greenhouse, and now working as in digital farming. So let's welcome our guest for today, Tushar Karande.
Hello, Rajiv. Hello, Abhishek.
Yeah. Hello, Tushar. Welcome to our podcast, But Why. Yeah.
Thank you, Abhishek. Thank you, Rajiv. It's a long time. We had all this one-to-one conversations before pandemic. Now it's a pleasure we are having this.
It's a pleasure to have you with us, and I'll be very frank. After having introduced you and listening to your introductions being done in Toastmasters so many times, I don't know whether it's the time the gap it has been or other way around, but this whole introduction of yours was a pretty new and pretty refreshing thing for me. About the agriculture engineering, then the MBA, and many more. I very well remembered one thing about you was your Israel visits, and right now, especially you were reminded when Israel was a very hot topic pretty recently, all over the world. But yeah, well, it's great to have you with us today.
Yes, thank you. Yes.
Tushar, before we start and jump to our topic for the day, we would like to know that, you know, everyone that I know, whenever they want to do something in their life, they want to do, for example, they want to follow their passion, the first thing they do is they complete engineering. And the best way to do it is completing computer engineering. It's the easiest way to achieve your dreams. But you have chosen something different. You have chosen to become agriculture engineering. So what is an agriculture engineering and how did you choose this? Because 10 years ago, so you have 10 years of experience, but before, say 14 years ago, this was till now, it's not, we don't know about much about agriculture engineering. 14 years ago, it was actually the field that no one explored. So tell us about something about that first.
Yes. It's always quite surprising for people that when I say I've done engineering and the next is, okay, I've done a different branch in engineering, which is agriculture engineering. And it's, of course, it's still not well known of. But inspiration was that, yes, I come from a cotton growing family in one of the districts of Vidarbha. And had seen, I would not say in full of my childhood, because I studied in a residential school, but had the background of how does agriculture go into people's life, the cotton cycle and others. And because I studied in a residential school, we had a knack of doing something different. And during the 10 plus 2, like, of course, we have our like 11th and 12th, we started discussing. Of course, engineering was, as you said, was the thing, but never thought upon that this would be a branch until the 12th, wherein people started putting up options that, okay, I have to do engineering, and which branch was there, mechanical, computer, and IT. And then I stumbled upon one of the professors, my father, during my 11th vacations, we went to our relatives. He was a professor in an agriculture university. And he exposed that, okay, how is that sector and how is it there? So even if you, I would say that even if you are doing good off in agriculture, as Alex say, you would be, I would say the chances of being successful is there high, because it's not a kind of an regular degree. And that's why agriculture engineering, of course, it has its own criteria, and there are different agriculture universities, and hence I did agriculture engineering from an agriculture university. For your information, there are 4 agriculture universities in India, and Maharashtra is the most. Others have only 1 agriculture university in 1 state. So that is how I landed up in agriculture engineering. What is agriculture engineering is actually a branch which helps you to apply agriculture with a little bit of technology. For example, we studied mechanical, we studied a little bit of fluid mechanics, we studied a little bit of soil. But for example, if we study mechanics, so how should be the shear, how should be the pull or plow, what kind of soil is suitable for that kind of a plow, what kind of tractors would be suitable. So we study tractors, we study water, we study soil, we have a little bit of agronomy as well. So it's a mixture of everything which is related to agriculture and putting an application of technology. So we have another branch which is called agriculture, or let's say horticulture, which is pure science. This is technology side. So that is about how I landed up into agriculture engineering, and what is agriculture engineering, I would say.
What was the name of your college, Tushar?
Yeah, so the university was Mahatma Phule Krishi Vidyapeeth. It's a Rauri, and I studied from a Nashik college. So we have College of Agriculture Nasik, which is KKV. So I studied from that college, which is affiliated to one of the agriculture universities.
Excellent. And is the process getting into agriculture engineering more or less similar to any other bachelor degree, which is a 4-year bachelor course? Or is there some distinctions getting, like, basic steps after 10 plus 2?
Yeah, so when I had this course, I would say the criteria was simple, 12 marks. And if you have done some courses like crop science, you will get additional points. Like, for example, we have some like NSS and others, sometimes we have for some courses. Here, if you have crop science or animal husbandry in your 10 plus 2, you will get additional points. Plus, if you have, one of your family has an agricultural land, you get 6 more points. So that was the criteria in that time. So sons of agriculturists would get preference or more points. But now it is, I would say, commercialized, like you have a proper CET, 50% 12 marks, 50% agricultural entrance exam.
And what are the availability of seats? Like, what is the usual probability of people, number of students going for this kind of education, going for agriculture engineering, basically, at least in Maharashtra? Just a, like an estimate. I know your estimate might be 14, maybe it's 14 years old, but if you know anything of the recent stats also for our viewers, if you can tell something
about
it. I think
so. Because we generally have this discussion, because we kind of ourselves know, it's a limited circle, so
it's a niche,
there's a lot of discussion and there. I feel, and when we had this number, the number of agriculture graduates which pass out from Maharashtra would be around 1,500, 1,500. And the colleges would be 7-8 to the max, not more than that. So that is the number. There is a far number for BSc agriculture, but agriculture is still red. While Maharashtra, as I said, is the largest number. If I would share you that Haryana, or let's say Uttarakhand, would be producing only 64 agriculture engineers every year. And just an information, like, and this was during our times, probably the case is now the same. You could imagine that our father used to say that during our times, if you had a degree, you would almost have a job in your hands. You just need to pass out. One of my friends was saying that in Bihar, there is a university called PUSA. Veterinary degrees, or let's say horticulture degrees, as soon as you come out of the degree, there are high chances you will land into a government job, because there are so many openings and you just need a degree. Of course, in that part of the states, it's a little bit tougher in western southern parts, but it's still there. And one of the key things, a lot of people go into administrative services, so like MPSC and UPSC, and a lot of less them goes to their core field itself. So that's how the sector is, which I see, and it's evolving over the period of time, I would say.
You were talking about that if you have a land, then you get extra marks.
Yes, if you have land, you get additional marks. This is during my time, 10, 12 years back. So you used to get like, if you have 85 in 12th, you get plus 6 if you have land. You have to show that your grandfather or father has a land. You have to show that, let's say, 7-12 extra, what we call Satbara in Marathi. Then you get plus 6 points.
Yeah, I said, imagine the same case would have happened with a computer engineer. If you have a computer, then you will get extra marks. At least that way I could have got a better college.
Yeah. Very true, I would say. And that's why I made sure that I bought some amount of land in my own name. So 4 or 5 years before, because that's a scarce thing. And I thought if something happens, then let's have some land on my name itself. My father has some, I'll have some on my name.
So after the completion of your 4 years agriculture engineering course, what is the ideal or like the usual approach of any agriculture engineer? Like the question is slightly open-ended, but it's like, is it necessary or is it recommended by you that they should go for something else, some extra course, or should they seek job? And if job, then what type of sector? Of course, agriculture, but slightly specific in that. Maybe if you can shed some light on that.
Yeah, so I would put it into 3 parts. Like, students generally go for, one part is the definite, as I said, administrative services. So I can share with you one fact that I have seen a batch in Rauri, and I take a module course with MPKV Rauri. So the students are very clear from 10th itself. It's a college in Valwa, Taluka in Sangli. So from 10th, they decide, I want to take crop science. I want to go to a college affiliated to MPKV Rauri. And they start doing their MPSC, UPSC preparation. And it's very rare. You would also observe it that your 10-12 batchmates are your UG batchmates. It's very rare, right? Because 10. But I saw a batch which has 4 or 5 batchmates of 10-12 from one college becoming a part of 64. And that's why the first lot is the administrative services. The second lot is jobs. So tractor companies, irrigation companies, food processing companies, and banks. In Maharashtra, there is not a direct bank recruiting policy, but like colleges in BHU, like the IIT, BHU, and others, wherein direct government colleges, government banks directly recruit for BSc Agri in the agriculture post. But the others are like John Deere. A few of my friends are in John Deere or Mahindra. They are into the R&D division. So that some mechanical engineer devices, and then they have to apply appliances. So that's the second part. The third aspect is, and I would say most of the lot, I would say 50% of the lot goes for higher education. So people may go for M.Tech, people may go for MBA. People, there is a new, I would say, a fad that people, agriculture education in Western countries is a good popular, wherein people go for geoinformatics, GIS, flood detection kind of courses. Few of my friends have done that. And that's how people stream into administrative jobs or higher education.
Since you mentioned it's a popular trend right now to go outside for for foreign education, again, since it's a niche, can you highlight which countries are, like, right now in India, US, Australia are popular choices, UK are popular choices for default engineers like us, but for agriculture engineering, are there any specific countries which are popular amongst the students? And like maybe one or two or something.
So the best is Wageningen University in Netherlands. It's very good, wherein it encourages a lot of startups and people who are from a pure technical background go there. Then there is a Cal State, I'm not recollecting the name, but in US, there's one university, which is Harvard also has one agribusiness course.
Of course.
That's what I would say. But Wageningen is the number one agriculture university. People generally, some of the people go to AIT also, Asian Institute of Technology, which is in Thailand, I would say. But it's quite, I would say, popular in India because it's quite cheap. And then you are able to go to PhDs and others and some research institutes. There's a called postdoctoral research. So people do their degrees fast and then go to different institutes to research and get paid for it.
If Rajiv had known about the Thailand university, then Rajiv might have considered.
I would have, agriculture, yeah, I would have gone.
Because he does have agriculture land. So he land, already has, yes. He has some land on his name.
That's true.
Rajiv, maybe next land. Time.
Maybe next time. I might ask my future son, who to go for that. You know, at least wo mere dream complete karega.
May God bless you with only daughters.
So,
हमारे बेटी भी कुछ भाइयों से कम है क्या?
Today is the day.
Yes.
Congratulations, India, for bagging its first silver medal.
First silver medal. Yes.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the actual topic and one you are expertise in, digital farming or digitalization of farming.
Yes. So when we say digitalization, so before that, there is a lot of talk about automation in agriculture. So initially, things used to be done by hand. Now machines came, the planters, the harvesters, the tractors came into the field. That is automation. But now if you connect this equipments to internet and check it remotely. So for example, sitting here, I am going to see the tractor which I own and how is my supervisor in the field doing it. Seeing it on my remote phone, checking the speed, checking the fuel, plus also getting the weather information. So any automation which is connected to internet and getting much more insights, we call it, let's say, digital farming. And I would say, the analytics behind it, because one is the automation wherein you just open and close, but the behind what comes is the analytics. That, for example, if the farmer wants to plant a particular crop in the field, is it the right time? For example, you can't now tell anybody in Raigarh or anywhere to plant because it's heavily raining, because it's not going to germinate. So the analytics of weather forecast, soil moisture condition, plus all the insights make into a digital agriculture gambit. And I would say that it also helps in the information gap. So it's one is on the field, but the second aspect is about one person sitting in the remote place in Sangli is able to get all the information across the world. It can be prices of the crops. It can be weather information, which I said. Or it can be any other thing if he wants to see a scheme. And that is what we call the digitalization of agriculture, wherein we have some farmers who can send directly sell all the goods from the mobile phone, or at least track, and we can also order it now. So that's kind of I would say digitalization of which is of agriculture, and we consider it as the fourth wave. The first wave was with the animals. So instead of by hand, you are doing it by cows or let's say bulls into the fields. That was the first, which is animal force. The second one was the mechanical force. So instead of an animal, you are using some machines or let's say wheel and others. The third was chemical or fertilizer. So you have some pest and disease, you spray something and you have a better protection and better yield. And what people, I would say, in this sector say that the fourth one would be the digitalization of agriculture, where everything is connected to the internet, just like we are connected. Everything we get to know, even if staying away from the farms, we are getting a lot of information from the farms. And that is, we call the fourth wave, which is a digitalization of agriculture.
So in layman's term, we can say, Alexa, mera plant laga do. Something like that.
Yes. Very true, very true. Alexa, mujhe bata, barish hone wali hai ki nahi? Mujhe fertilizer dena hai. And Alexa will say, okay, aap karo.
The unfortunate part is Alexa will be relying on Pune Weather Shala, Pune Weather Department, and that is not going to be much of a reliable source, unfortunately, when it comes to counting rains. So, yeah,
that was actually a question that considering whatever the information that we have and currently whatever weather departments gives us, how reliable those sources would be, because so far the traditional farming, they used to do on the basis of their calendars, that this month or nakshatras, because based on that they know how much it will pour and when to harvest a crop and when not to. So how these changes will affect directly in this digitalization process?
Yeah, so till now it was a black box for the farmer. So he used to just have, if you could recall during a childhood, we used to just have a radio, or we used to have the 7 o'clock news. And the farmer, and they used to not tell that, okay, in Panvel you are going to have this much rain. They should just tell Raigad or some place. But now we are at somewhere around like 0%. Even if the farmer gets information from like 70, is it going to rain very heavy or heavy, or it's going to be like thunderstorms? That itself is a very good information from the existing information which he has. For example, we are testing a product. And the farmer is not he's not concerned about the rains. He's concerned about the wind speed. And he said, because I want to spray, and it's costlier spray, he says, I'm just taking at the wind speed. And on that basis, I'm taking a decision that whether I will spray or not. And he says, I don't want the whole day. I just want a window of 1-2 hours and I'm fine for it. And hence, it's not getting to the perfect prediction, but it is going near to the perfect. And that would be much, much more helpful than the existing one.
Tushar, how much government supports, state governments or the central government supports this digital farming? Is there are any subsidies, or what are the situation from government side?
Yes, I think so. While digitalization of agriculture, or let's say government speaks a lot of it, but if I could share that, it's not a priority, and this is my personal look, this is not a priority for the government. The priority for the government is now three things, that every farmer, and this is what it's like the Israel model, that every farmer gets water. So what does it mean? That still 60% of our Indian fields do not have consistent source of water. As against in Israel, if you are a farmer, it's the government's duty that it will, just like a tap, like if you're in Pune, the tap responsibility to the municipality and you have to pay the bill. So in Israel, the government's responsibility is to give you a water with the regular pressure plus this, and you can use whatever you want, you have to pay for it. But in India, you know, it's an you and the government, the water in Israel is government property. So you can't dig wells anywhere. It's government equipment. What Indian government is also doing good, that they are having some infrastructure projects which will help the farmer, not to the field, but at least to some location like 100, 200 meters and have water supply. But it's still a long road ahead. So for the government, it's the three priorities. That water, as I said. Second, electricity. We are enjoying 24 hours of electricity, but the electricity in agriculture is not 24 hours. I'm talking about the three phase. So Maharashtra has 8 hours, Gujarat has 8 hours, Karnataka has 6 hours, Chhattisgarh has 16 hours. Lucky states like Telangana has 24 hours and also free. So, and the third one is the prices, which is you would have heard in the news about the farm laws and others. So the MSPs and the model laws which the government wants to put in. So that's the basic. So while government is talking about it, it is not subsidizing the user. So the government is not encouraging that you do all this digitalization, we will pay you. Just for example, the core product which banks on this, or the product which my company represents, is drip irrigation, which is subsidized because it saves water and others. But the automation part is not subsidizing government. And my personal opinion is not to also subsidize this, because let the market forces pay. And today, it's not the cotton or rice farmer or jowar farmer who are adopting this. It is the farmers or horticulture farmers. You see all the videos, right? The multi-millionaire farmers, the farmers who earn a lot. That lot, plus the lot who are doing commercial agriculture, who have good amount of land, want to do commercial agriculture, exports. There are a lot of examples. And that is the segment which will, I would say, the first adopters. And hence, for the government, it's not a priority, but the government through different institutes is encouraging these digital startups, I would say. There are a lot of startups there, and they're giving grants. Even the college which I studied in my PG in Hyderabad is a government Ministry of Agriculture college. It has an incubation program that if you have an idea, and if the idea is good, you come, you get mentored. And if you're leaving your job, you will also get some amount of, let's say, consistent salary that you are not worried about your expenses. And you'll get some grants, equity, mentorship, incubation. And there are, I would say, at least 10 agriculture institutes would do it. And there is an, the name is quite interesting. It's called RKVY Raftar. So there is a Raftar scheme. And so it's quite interesting, and that itself is there. And the full form is like RKVY is Rashtriya Krishi Vikas Yojana, and the Raftar is Remunerative Approaches for Agriculture and Allied Sectors Rejuvenation. So, you know, this government is quite well off in such names. So they have this Raftar scheme. But so, yes. So that's where the government is doing such things. Niti Aayog is working some of it, but it's doing its bit, but it's not the focus, I would say. And I would not like to also it to focus on these things, but the basic things which is there. Pehle to basics ko, roti, kapda, makan, and
yes.
Then you will have.
Yes.
Listening to you, the topic which was highlighted by Rajiv about MSP, we can have a whole separate podcast that can be a never ending 2 hours long story. podcast which can go both ways.
And you know what happens now, because I studied in a government college. I represent an organization. Wherever I go, and when this topic comes, I have to say these views are my personal, and this has nothing to do with someone I represent, because it's a very sensitive subject, politically, socially sensitive. You may have your opinions and it might be misinterpreted many times. And as you said, longs of discussions.
Coming back to the digitalization of agriculture part, to the topic. So till now we discussed like the process of getting into or becoming an engineer with the agriculture as being the main, like the masters of it. But are there slots or are there options for people who have not done agriculture engineering to explore a career in agriculture or farming sector?
Definitely, I would say, and there are many examples. I would like to quote a VC, and there are a lot of VCs also coming, agri-specific VCs coming up, and his statement is quite clear, and he's one of, let's say, one of the first founding members of agriculturist-focused VC in India. His statement was correct, and I completely agree with it, that if you have 20 acres of land in Jalgaon and Banana, versus you pass out MBA from one of the most premier colleges in India, still he said you should choose the one with the farms, because a 20-acre banana farm in Jalgaon will fetch you more money if you do the agriculture right than a salary of a premier MBA grad pass out in India. And why? Because it had its benefit. And that is why there is a lot of non-agricultural background students, entrepreneurs coming. And I've seen example, if I can quote without any names, I know an MBA grad coming from a metro city, nothing to do with agriculture. He was in one of the metro cities since his childhood. With all the funding also. He took external funding and is doing successful farming, and I would say far better than the farmers. So to summarize, I would say the first part, which is the farming. Farming is a mix of art and science. It's not that you have to be taught or there is a formal education. Yes, we did formal education, and I don't want to demean our education, but there are a lot of mediums and a lot of applications available which help you to do farming in a subtle, good way. And if you also adopt that, for example, Abhishek, you are into entrepreneurship. A normal entrepreneur, if I could guess, that if he's investing 100 rupees, he would invest at least 30-40 rupees, or the efforts that a normal EBITDA of listed companies, Rajiv also come from a listed company, 30-40% is the EBITDA which the companies expect. If a farmer does basic agriculturals right, and if the price is okay, I'm not saying super good and super, he will be able to fetch 50% of EBITDA in his farming. So, and that's why it attracts a lot.
That's impressive.
Coming upon companies, the second aspect was, one is the farming. As I said, farm is quite lucrative and many companies are coming up. There are a lot of startups which are built in by non-agriculturists, because ultimately it is principles, right? You have to put in the right principles, you have to define the problem, you have to have the solutions, and then you may put in. And lastly, there is a point that, for example, there is a lot of value in the chain. And this brings to my one example, and I always give it, and this was one personal experience, is that, you know, a papaya in Pune, a very good, a price would be like 10 rupees a kg, 15 rupees a kg, and the normal price is 20 rupees a kg, 30 rupees a kg. So my father-in-law came and we went together for shopping. For vegetables nearby now in Kothrud. And he asked, what is the papaya for? He says, 30 rupees per kg. And he said, oh, 30 rupees? What do you say? It's normal. Anyway, sometimes they give 40, 50 also. He says, do you know what? And these were his words. I sold papaya at my own farm at 3 rupees per kg. 3 rupees per kg. And that is 600 kilometers from here. And the trader did not take it all. Ultimately, I had to announce in my village that papayas are in my field. Whosoever wants it can take it, because I want to empty the field. And this is the gap in the value chain. And very good companies, non-agricultures, Ninja Cart, Big Basket, and other companies are trying to connect directly with farmers. Ultimately, if my father-in-law would have even got 10 rupees, he would have been very much happy, because today is getting business. And that's where people are making an impact, not only from this sector, but also from other aspects. And I think so. The Jugadu engineers are doing it a lot in this sector.
It's always good to have a model, something in farming also, just like Amazon is doing, is to get from the store and directly to the consumer. And what they're doing is basically logistics and making it easier. It's like putting the technology out there and the farmers have to not manage it, but do their what exactly they are good at, and not worry about the other things.
Prices.
While getting, like you said, 10 rupees on a 3 rupee product is more than 300% increase of the value itself. So that is that's a good like great increase. And so excellent.
But I have also an anecdote where my uncle, who also does farming, and he used the same thing. He has a agriculture bond with some company, and they collect all their vegetables, and he gets a good return of it. So because of these companies like Big Basket or Nature Basket, these companies, because of them, agriculture got new value, and that's true. If they are getting that value, that is good.
Yeah, to give you statistics about this farmer to direct super chain. So one of my seniors is a founder of such direct this. So during the pandemic, the regular statistics, 95% unorganized, that people, we take it from the vegetable vendors, and 5% is organized, which is from this Reliance and other malls. During the pandemic, it went to 80-20. So 80% unorganized, 20% organized. And now things were normalized and became 90-10. And he says from 5% to 10% within a year, and we were struggling since 10 years to take this 1%, 2% to 5%. And you know, in 1 year it doubled itself, and we are not able to cater because of the capacity and this. And it is a win-win thing. You get directly from the farm. The farmers get better prices, and the value chain also earns out of it. So it's a win-win thing.
Right.
So, Tushar, since we are mentioning about, we had some names thrown in our conversation like Big Basket, Nature's Basket, etc. These are no more startups. They have reached for the skies now. But if somebody wants to read or like to or want to not like to read the story or get themselves acquainted with such startups, a story of their startups, what would you suggest, like few of your favorite ones which one should research or read, just for a hint of motivation, or maybe just a source of good case study or a story?
Yes,
Indians one.
Of course, yeah.
Indians, yeah. And maybe if there is a special one, then an international also.
Sure. I'll start with the ones which actually fascinated me in the past 1 year. And it was a very clear business model. And I would say that I liked the model. So what this, again, non-agriculturist, engineering grads just out of college, they said there is a lot of information in the public domain, but the farmer doesn't know that. For example, I'm a sugarcane farmer and I have to do like 100 tasks. But because it's not only farming he's doing, he has some social things and he has to do many things. Because for example, Abhishek, you are doing events and other entrepreneurs. You have a fixed calendar that what you have to do and you have to adhere to it. Farmer also adheres, but for some odd reasons, he does not able to adhere. So these two grads came up with an app, and the target is only smartphone farmers. And the beauty of Indian agriculture is that you have segments for everything. So as we say that India is a market for everything. You can sell your Marutis, you can sell your Audis, you can sell everything. And similar is for agriculture. You have the best of the best farmers. You have the ones which we actually have a lot of things to do. And they targeted only the smartphone farmers. They said, okay, you pay 1,000 rupees. We will do your soil water analysis. And we will give you follow-ups on your activities. And they recruited 10-12 BSc grads, trained them. So, and all were sitting remotely. And lockdown, you know that everybody can sit from the home and work. And the job was only that you need to register, pay 1,000 rupees, and we will give you follow-ups, recommendations, soil water analysis, and this. And people, now imagine a farmer of 5-10 acres, and he's getting this follow-ups, something like a gym trainer or a personalized trainer. And 1,000 rupees seems to be probably less for the farmer because he's getting all the good But collecting 1,000 rupees from almost 1 lakh farm is a big amount of money. And you're investing it and you're getting a lot of money by just investing 10 people and a half. So the name of the startup is Bharat Agri. Nothing. I am just fascinated. I don't know any of the founders, but I liked it a lot. So that's one thing. One startup, which actually is an Indian startup and is doing a lot and is actually a case study that how, you know, the stories of Wipros and Infosys and let's say Persistent also, like the IT companies which started from India and now having an impact outside. Cropin is one company and it is supposed to be like the flag bearer of Indian agriculture startups, which is not only catering Indian, but also Southeast Asia, African, and also some part of European countries also. And it is again software solutions, again software plus a little bit of these things. And that's an interesting company, Cropin. I would say that given its strength and everything, and given, let's say, Rajiv, you're from IT, how people with IT can do magics. This is a combination of a thing which has a potential and plus the talent which India has. And that is, I would say, if I could say, these were the two companies. One different thing is that while these are like product companies, and we are talking something on podcasting, social media, and influencing, there is one person I like, and I met him personally also. His name is, the YouTube channel is Indian Farmer. So he was a normal farmer. He started shooting videos and now he has about 1 million subscribers and he's just creating content. He's creating content. YouTube had his creator spotlight video on him and he stays in a village, travels, shoots. He has brand collabs. And I would say that he's like an idol. And there are many others also. I gave one example, which is from Satara, but not only about products, it can be about content also. So in this sector, one last one is on an international one. Fitech is an Israeli company and I have observed it closely. So what's his job is, and it's very fascinating that, for example, imagine that if you are not eating food for 5 days, so you will get a little bit thin. I would not say you will lose a little bit weight, but you'll also look pale. So what does this, they have sensor, which is called dendrometer. It has a sensor which calculates the diameter. And from the diameter, it is able to gauge if the plant is stressed or not stressed. Of course, when it is sunshine, it will get a little bit stressed because it is the sun, but it should not stress too much. And that's how this company, Fitech, again, an Israeli company, made a good process. And that's why Israeli companies are very good in doing that, that they have something innovative coming up and then they spread across. The company which I represent also was started out from, and it's a different story itself, but it started out from Israel and now spread across the world. So Fitech is the company. And all these names which I suggested are nothing that we are doing something commercial or have them, but just these are just like random names which I like. And except the Indian Farmer, which is actually an agriculture, all these comes from non-agricultural system, which proves that there is ample space, ample potential, and I would say ample need to have it in this sector.
It's surprising to hear from your words that two countries which you mentioned in this in our podcast today has been Netherlands, which has one of the top agriculture university, and the other one is Israel. And both of these countries are like compared to the geographical size of India, or like they are very small countries. And Israel has a challenge with water, right? Like you said, Israel is right in the Middle East, and it's not 100% green, as just we might be lucky in India to have that much of water. Unfortunately, right now we are having too much of water and rains. But it's a very curious like a question from my side, that how does a country like Israel or Netherlands It is a very random question, but how does a country like Israel be so, or why is it so advanced in this sector, which is agriculture? Because it's very odd to place this, expect this country, like if people tomorrow, if ask some, like which are the leading countries in agriculture, like US comes one of the agriculture giants, or maybe Brazil, if I have to think of somebody who has no knowledge, but Israel becomes a very a surprise. Do you have any like points on that? Like why Israel is on the map regarding this world map?
Yes, and this might be like my observation, may or may not be right. One thing is that all these companies which have come up from a kibbutz culture. So the kibbutz was like, we have cooperatives. So kibbutz was a way wherein farmers, or let's say not even farmers, so people come together because you know the history, and which is we all are aware of, and they had to come together, stay together, work together. And they had this kibbutz form that people used to come together. So one used to do only, let's say, farming. One used to do only the household things. One used to do only the shopping kind of things. So there was very concentrated efforts. And that's why the internal conflicts, or let's say the things, were all nullified. And they only focused on one thing, which is that what are our needs? And we need to be self-reliant. And definitely that we understood that food is something that we need to be self-reliant with, because that's the necessity thing. And of course, other things can catch up. And that's why they have put in. I can give a similar example, and you can relate it easily, that we all have struggled with our vaccine slots, right? And we all knew that if you are going to lay back, you're not going to get vaccine slots. You have to try it. You have to do all the bots and everything. And that was the thinking, that if you are going to lay it back, and if you're not going to think about what's going to be there, and that was the thought process, that we don't have water, we have to be self-reliant, we may not have a good transportation. That's why the thinking about doing everything, I would say, the word is, Shahid Kapoor mentions these names in one of the movie, Haider, Chutzpah, Chutzpah, Chutzpah is the, let's say we call Indian Jugaad. So it's called Israeli chutzpah, and that's the, like, say, we call it, the right word would be a risk, and the ability to take risk. So that's the first part. The second part is, this was the agriculture part, but why this innovation comes into that, the ability to have, be able to take risk. So failure is been accepted, like we say in our things, that it's okay to fail. We were in a organization like which is Toastmasters and platform to fail. So similarly, they have things that it's easy to fail, and that's why trying out the things, there's no social stigma and other things. And then if you're trying 100 things, one is obviously going to click, and that's why it is going there. And one thing, a simple example which I would say, and this comes that, for example, sugarcane in India is sown in many, many types. But what I've seen is that if one thing clicks, for example, if cotton clicks in Israel at 3.5 feet and it's doing good, they would not think about much about it. They would say, okay, 3.5, let's start thinking about other things. In India, what happens is, okay, he said 3.5, let me try 4, let me 5. But 3.5 is successful. Let's not think about it. Let's try to do the next thing. And that might be the, let's say, the different thing which many of the startups have come up from Israel, or let's say the agricultural inventions have come up from Israel, I would say.
To summarize, my understanding of what you said is that there are two things. One is the necessity. It's the mother of all innovation, of all inventions. They
Correct.
After their creation, they it was a basic need to make yourself self-reliant, at least in the most basic of food.
It's like, as you said, Abhishek, that imagine we are all engineers. Imagine you have an exam tomorrow, you become super productive.
Yes.
Super productive the night before. Similarly, they know that they have an exam every day, if they don't do it, and they have been come to a point that now, okay, now they have earned a name for themselves, and that's why it is.
The priority on the last day of exam.
Yes. So I called it rocket theory. I called it rocket theory, that you won't take off until your back is on fire.
True. And that's why the defense part also came up, right? Because they knew that if they are going to innovate in defense, they would have all the challenges. That's why they innovated. Right. It's a human nature. It's not, I would say, and they were able to crack the nut.
So that's it for this podcast. We had a very wonderful session with Tushar. We learned a lot of new things. And if you want to still explore more about this farming and majorly about digital farming, you can connect to Tushar. Tushar, we would like to know your Insta or Facebook handles so that people can connect you over the social media.
Or LinkedIn handle if you have.
Or LinkedIn
handle. I prefer LinkedIn, yeah.
Yes. So we will tag Tushar's LinkedIn handle in our show notes. But Tushar, can you please help us with your LinkedIn handle?
Yeah, I'll share it as well. I'll with the LinkedIn, because it's a different name. So, but I'll share it and then you can put it into the description or the show notes.
Excellent. And I thank you so much, Tushar, for doing this with us. This has been a very informative and an eye-opening session for me, because this is one of the sectors which is very close to every single person. Like in India, we talk about it, like Jai Kisan, like Kisan, farming, everything is like, has been, we are very poetic about this topic. But still, we as Indians staying in city, we don't talk much about it. So it's a very great part to be acquainted with something which is so close to us, yet so far that we are unfortunately we are ignorant. But thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, one last line I would like to, and then before to end it here, is that we define ourselves, and I say it many times, I define ourselves that we work in a sector, and Rajiv can connect it really, that we don't work in hours, we work in acres. So one sector, which is we have to work in acres, not in hours.
Excellent.
On that note, we would like to end our podcast. If you want to connect both of us, I would like to share my Insta as well as Twitter handle. My Insta and Twitter handle is private variable, no space, and all small.
Yeah, and if you want to connect with me, my name is Abhishek, and you can connect with me on Instagram at no straight face policy. There are no spaces in this. And on Twitter at Kolabhi, it's KOLABHI. We would like to hear about what you think about the podcast, and anything, any feedback you have, or any discussions which you want us to be included in a future podcast. We thank Tushar again for doing this with us, and hope you enjoy this podcast. Have a good day.